Desperate for an education, Sofia contracted a fictitious marriage with Vladimir Kovalevsky, moved to Germany, and became the very first woman in Europe to earn a doctorate in mathematics.
After she saw my first one, which was called Hysterical Blindness and Other Southern Tragedies That Have Plagued My Life Thus Far, she said to me, "If I live to be 105, Leslie, I'll never understand this deep-seated need that you have to air our dirty laundry. Why can't you just whisper it to a therapist?"
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uruguay prepares for marriage equality, Gambia's president calls gays satanic, and what Leslie Jordan's mother doesn't want you to know. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 6, 2013. Uruguay's Senate approved the marriage equality bill this week by an overwhelming vote of 23-8. It states that marriage is the permanent union between two persons of the same or opposite sex. The words in marriage contracts will be changed from marido y mujer, husband and woman, to the gender-neutral contrayentes, contracting parties. The country currently allows same-gender couples to enter into civil unions. The marriage equality upgrade passed in Uruguay's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, in December. Lawmakers there are expected to agree to minor changes to the bill made in the Senate by the end of the month. President José Mujica has said he'll sign it into law soon thereafter. Uruguay's Roman Catholic bishop, Jaime Fuentes, expressed his vehement opposition to the move, warning that it was part of a war against the family. But equality activists say the first weddings of lesbian and gay couples should take place in the country in July or August. Uruguay will be the second nation in South America to open civil marriage to same-gender couples, following Argentina in 2010.
A judge in Paraguay, which is bordered by Argentina to the south, refused this week to register the marriage of a gay couple who legally wed there last year, citing Paraguay's constitutional definition of marriage as being between one man and one woman. Simone Casal tied the knot with Sergio Lopez in Rosario, Argentina in March 2012 and sued to have the marriage recognized in their home country. The couple is active in Paraguay's LGBT advocacy group Somos Gay and said the ruling didn't surprise them. They plan to appeal it to the nation's Supreme Court and, if necessary, to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. Lawmaker José López of the opposition National Union of Ethical Citizens Party said last month that there is no prospect of any bill on gay marriage, calling same-gender unions reprehensible for being unnatural. The Senate in the South American country of Colombia, however, is reportedly scheduled to begin debate in the coming week on a proposal to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples there.
And France's Senate began debating a marriage equality bill this week that would also allow same-gender couples to adopt children. Debate is scheduled to continue until April 13th. The National Assembly approved the measure last month. Both chambers are dominated by strongly supportive President François Hollande's Socialist Party and its allies. Despite strident and sometimes riotous protest demonstrations against the bill in recent months organized by the country's Roman Catholic Church and other so-called family groups, parliamentary passage appears to be all but certain. According to recent public opinion polls, a narrow majority in France supports marriage equality. That enthusiasm falls, however, when questions about adoption equality are raised.
A former Southeast Arizona copper mining town reborn as an artist community defied the threat of legal action this week and became the first city in the southwestern U.S. state to offer civil unions to gay and lesbian couples. Lawmakers in Bisbee, a city of about 5,600 people that a popular bumper sticker describes as a liberal oasis in conservative desert, voted 5-2 to allow any adult couple to unite in a civil ceremony, regardless of their gender or sexual orientation. Benefits, which are only valid within Bisbee city limits, include hospital visitation, a family pass for the swimming pool, and, for municipal employees, the chance for same-gender partners to buy into their spouse's benefits package. Jean Connors, the first-term city council member who proposed the measure, told reporters that, "We're just acknowledging the people that live here, and for a tiny town, it's pretty neat." Arizona Attorney General Tom Horn begs to differ, however. The state constitution defines civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual, so Horn wrote to the council shortly before the vote warning that it had no authority to pass the ordinance, and that if approved, he would have it blocked in court before it could take effect in May. But Bisbee City Attorney John McKinnon insists that civil unions don't challenge state law and that the council acted within its authority.
Elsewhere, Gambia's President Yahya Jammeh has once again almost literally told gays and lesbians to drop dead. Speaking against violent crime, corruption, and tribalism at the opening of the West African country's parliament in Banjul this week, and in the presence of several foreign diplomats, Jammeh threw in a rant against homosexuality, calling it anti-God, anti-human, and anti-civilization. Homosexuals are not welcome in the Gambia. If we catch you, you will regret why you are born, he said. Allowing homosexuality means allowing satanic rites. We will not allow gays here. Gambian law currently punishes private consensual adult gay sex with up to 14 years in prison. But Jammeh once threatened to behead any gay person found in Gambia, and at another time gave all homosexuals 24 hours to get out of the country. He's also claimed to be able to cure HIV/AIDS.
Nepal's Blue Diamond Society is being financially strangled by a government office apparently bent on destroying the South Asian country's most prominent LGBT civil rights organization. According to a report in Gay Star News, the district administration office in Kathmandu is sitting on the charity's license renewal, which prevents the distribution of financial support to the organization from international bodies, including the Global Fund. The Blue Diamond Society has 42 offices across the country, and its 750 employees haven't been paid in more than 7 months. The organization, formed in 2001, has successfully lobbied the government for recognition of a third gender, convinced the Supreme Court to affirm the basic rights of LGBTI people, and had LGBTI issues added to the school curriculum. The UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, the global advocacy group Human Rights Watch, Nepal's National Human Rights Commission, and the Ministry of Health have each lobbied on behalf of the group. But as of this report, at least, the District Administration Office has refused to approve the license renewal. Blue Diamond Society founder Sunil Pant, who's also the country's only openly gay lawmaker, told reporters that, "We have been discriminated against and ostracized for so long, since childhood, so we are somehow used to this. People think we are powerless and voiceless," he said, "but we have enormous power, enormous capacity to stand on through any difficult situation. We don't ever give up."
The organizing committee of the St. Petersburg LGBT Pride is going ahead with plans to hold the event at the end of June in Russia's second largest city, despite its rocky history. Three previous efforts have ended with violent confrontations and arrests. Making matters worse, St. Petersburg recently enacted a bill outlawing homosexual propaganda, which would ban any public events supporting LGBT rights. Activists are convinced that judicial rulings will eventually overturn that law and several other similar laws in Russia. Nevertheless, the Kremlin and the Russian Orthodox Church are pushing for a national version.
But a Brazilian football star, now playing in St. Petersburg, has joined growing calls around the world for acceptance and inclusiveness in sports. Striker Giovanildo Vieira de Souza, nicknamed Hulk, was lured to Zenit St. Petersburg with a 40 million euro contract. 3 months after the mixed-race star was signed, a leading Zenit fan club published a manifesto against black or gay players, calling the exclusions an important tradition that underlines the identity of the club. But de Souza said during an interview with R Sport that, "I think those people, those fans, do not care about culture at all. I respect footballers of any skin color and any sexual orientation," he added. "Those fans who abuse people of a different color or gays just do not think at all." The club issued a statement soon thereafter denying claims that race is a factor in the players it selects. The statement said nothing, however, about gay players.
Meanwhile, St. Petersburg native and Russian President Vladimir Putin wants to ban adoptions of his country's orphans by foreign same-gender couples. The move appears to have been prompted by the pending marriage equality bill in France, which also opens adoption to same-gender couples. Russian children rights ombudsman Pavel Ostakov declared last month that he would work toward a future in which Russian orphans would be placed only with heterosexual couples. But any change in Russia's adoption policy would likely be made by the Ministry of Education, and it has yet to announce any new initiatives in that area. Following much publicized charges against an American couple that they had abused a Russian boy they'd adopted, the ministry did ban U.S. citizens of any orientation from adopting Russian children in January.
And finally, a critique of sorts will greet President Putin when he makes a state visit to the Netherlands in the coming week. The city council in Amsterdam voted to fly the rainbow flag during Putin's official time in the capital city to express its concern over the national bill that's working its way through the Russian parliament to outlaw propaganda of sodomy, lesbianism, bisexuality, and transgenderism. Amsterdam is committed to an open and tolerant city where everyone can be who he is, said a spokesman for the council. The flag stands for diversity and gay acceptance. In addition to official visits to local attractions, Putin is expected to join Dutch Queen Beatrix at the Netherlands-Russia 2013 Year of Friendship opening ceremony, and then dine with several Dutch and Russian businessmen. Putin is apparently on solid ground at home, however. A poll earlier this month found almost a quarter of the Russians surveyed support what was described as compulsory treatment for gay people. 5% said they should be liquidated.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 6th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Coming up, a fruit fly you didn't study in biology class after a minute of rainbow arithmetic.
Russian mathematician Sofia Kovalevskaya, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Born in Russia in 1850, Sofia Kovalevskaya grew up with a passion for mathematics. But in 19th century Russia, women were barred from universities. Desperate for an education, Sofia contracted a fictitious marriage with Vladimir Kovalevsky, moved to Germany, and became the very first woman in Europe to earn a doctorate in mathematics. Then Sofia moved to Sweden and got a teaching position at Stockholm University in 1889. It made her the very first Russian female professor in Europe, receiving high praise for her work. Later in life, Sofia met Anna Carlotta LaFleur, one of the best Swedish writers of her time and a fighter for women's emancipation. The pair became close friends and collaborated on a number of novels. After Sofia died of influenza in 1891, Anna Carlotta wrote her close friend's definitive biography. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Tonya Utkina.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra!
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? Ha ha! My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one, they'll be sad.
Leslie Jordan packs a load of talent and personality into his 4 foot 11 inch frame. He's a scene-stealing Emmy winner with prominent roles on TV shows like Will and Grace, Sordid Lives, Ally McBeal, and Star Trek Voyager. Those credits and his featured role in the Oscar-winning movie The Help have made Jordan a familiar face around the world. But the Chattanooga, Tennessee-born actor is also a natural storyteller. He toured some of his tales in a one-man show in the U.S. called My Trip Down the Pink Carpet that also had a successful run in London's West End in 2011. Jordan returned to the British capital last month with a new autobiographical slice of life, which he chatted up with Rosie Wilby on her Resonance FM Out in South London radio show.
I'm delighted that Leslie Jordan is back on Out in South London, back in the Resonance studios, because we saw you a couple of years ago when your Trip Down the Pink Carpet show was in the West End, and I saw that and it was absolutely fabulous. And now you're back with a brand new show, Fruit Fly. Tell us about that, Leslie, and what it's all about.
Fruit Fly answers the age-old question that has plagued generations for years. It's a question that scholars have pondered upon and wise men have...
Because you have a lot in common with scholars. I think of you as a scholarly type, Leslie.
It answers the age-old question, do gay men become their mothers?
And is this because you think you're becoming your mother?
it was a realization that I made. My mother, believe it or not, created when I was a little kid this amazing secret garden where it was okay for me to play with dolls and wear her high heel shoes. And she taught me to sew. And yet when I was about 12 and I told her that I thought that I was gay, you would have thought I'd stabbed her in the heart. I mean, you know, it's like,
Was it a surprise?
You're surprised? And I think it had more to do with her religious beliefs. Having come from a pretty devout Baptist upbringing. But it all came together. I took my mother. My mother had me at 19, very young. So I am 57 plus tax and deposit. No, I really am. I'm 57 with a little shipping and handling. No, I'm 57. So okay. My mother had me at 19. So my mother is 76. She's very young.
Yes.
But I took her on a gay cruise.
Was this the one in Alaska
yes.
I read about? Right,
yes.
Okay.
I took her to Alaska on a gay cruise. We've since gone. This summer I took her to Barcelona. We went to Barcelona on a cruise that took us to Ibiza and Casablanca. We're now gay cruise veterans. But this first gay cruise that I took her on, the entire ship adopted her. My mother became the undisputed queen.
Everyone's mom.
Of everyone there. And it was interesting. Something happened. I won't go into it because we don't have time, and it's the main thrust of this show.
Yes. Well, you don't want to give it away because people need to
see. She had a realization. She turned to me and said something that I almost fell into the ocean. I mean, it was just so profound what she came up with after her week with 2,000 gay men on a cruise to Alaska.
Right. Gosh, we'll have to come and find out. It's at the Leicester Square Theatre.
It is the Leicester Square Theatre. And for the first time, I've also sort of made it multimedia. My mother, I was photographed relentlessly as a child. My mother was the baby of nine.
Yeah.
My dad was the baby in his family of three. So when the two babies had a baby, that was me. Yeah. I was photographed.
And these, what about, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have 22 months
I was going to say,
you had
I thought you were going to say 22 brothers.
twin sisters. 22
right,
months younger than me. I have
so you've got two
identical twin sisters.
Wow.
And so they're a big part of the story. But we had my mother found an amazing box of slides from the 1950s. And I think back then the color was different. Maybe a three-color I don't know.
Yes, it was certainly different. A lot of things look more sepia tone, don't they?
They do. And when we ran them off or when I – you know, you had the round little cassette thing where the slide would fall and you would push a little thing.
Yeah, I know.
From the 50s. And we had all these slides. But when we ran them off into pictures, the colors were so vivid. And here I am in a little white raincoat with matching boots and a white – it was always on Christmas morning. So I sort of tailored it. I was in San Francisco for all of Christmas, and we ran Fruit Fly there, and it did really well. You know, it's interesting. My mother always, my entire life, wanted to know everything. You know, just sharp as a tack. Tell me what party you went to. Oh, what movie star was there? What did they have on? And as she's gotten older, it's not that she's gotten dotty or out of it. Her life has just, it's just, I called recently and I said, Mom, I got to go to the opening of The Help, which was a movie. I had a nice little part in that.
It won an Oscar, didn't it? Yeah.
It won.
Or it was certainly nominated.
It was certainly nominated. And then Octavia Spencer won for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm.
So it did win. And I think maybe a couple more. Mm. But I called Mom and I said, oh, and it was, Mother, when I took you to the Emmys, we got to meet all those movie stars. But this was, you wouldn't believe. And I went on forever and ever. And all of a sudden, Mother said, oh, well, that's just wonderful. Do you know that Ann Bodkin across the street is going to have to go into assisted living? And Leslie, she's younger than you. She just took off on this tangent, like, where is this? But I thought, you know,
Parents do that, though, don't they?
They just begin. Their lives become
sort of smaller.
Smaller,
yeah,
and they're not as interested in me, and it's not about me.
That's terrible.
I know.
Back to me. When I go and see my father,
who
lives in quite a small little town up north, he always gives me a rundown on the people that have died.
She loves that.
Oh, dear. I know. It's quite sad, isn't it? But it sounds like a very fond relationship you have with her. And, you know, in contrast to you do... You hear a lot of men writing about quite dysfunctional relationships with their mothers.
Which it went through that period. I think, the wonderful arc of this story. This is the first one-man show, and goodness knows I've been writing this. You know, I walk off stage sometimes and I think, you just regurgitate your life for everyone. What do you think that is so interesting? And then I get letters and I get phone calls and I get young men who come to me and say, oh, my gosh, your story... And so it's a gift. You know, it's just something that I'm good at. Things that have happened. I love the quote that comedy is tragedy 2 weeks later.
You know? Tragedy plus time.
So yes, I can take whatever tragic has happened and turn it into something somewhat interesting and somewhat relatable.
Yeah. But, I remember your pink carpet show that me and Jen Kero, who used to work on the show, we saw it. There were some points where people just applauding. It was very moving, you know, as well as the very funny moments.
And this one is the first one I wrote, because there were several before Pink Carpet. Mm-hmm. This is the first one that I wrote with a very clear vision. Okay. I have a director named David Galligan I've worked with for 20 years, and he's done everyone's one-person show from Rita Moreno to Tyne Daly to...
Oh, wow.
He's the king of the one-person shows, and I was his first. I asked him.
Okay.
He had directed many
plays,
but I said, would you direct a one-person show?
Yeah, right.
And so this was the first one in which we had a very clear idea, and we just laid the pictures out of me and my mom from day one till now.
So you show those on a screen
as part
of the show? Right.
It's multimedia.
How many images?
Well, there's 55 cues in all.
Wow,
so
okay.
I'm sure there's not that many pictures. There's sound cues.
Yeah, okay.
But it happens very fast. You know, it's not like I dwell on any one picture.
Right.
But it's kind of neat to see my mom and I. My mother was beautiful.
Yeah.
When I was little, I really thought she was a fairy princess.
Oh.
I would hear stories about a fairy princess, and I thought, that's my mother. I thought she was a fairy princess because she was what was known as a bashful blonde then.
Oh.
Then she went platinum.
Oh, yeah.
And married a millionaire. And we went through that period.
Yeah.
And then there's this final image of her today. She knows nothing about this show.
Has she not seen it?
She hasn't seen any of my stuff.
Oh, she hasn't seen anything?
She saw one thing I did years ago, and I talked dirty.
Do you keep her away deliberately? Or?
I do. She said to me one time, after she saw my first one, which was called Hysterical Blindness and Other Southern Tragedies That Have Plagued My Life Thus Far, she said to me, if I live to be 105, Leslie, I'll never understand this deep-seated need that you have to air our dirty laundry. Why can't you just whisper it to a therapist? And so...
Well, you can't get fame and fortune out of that, can you?
And I, you know, she's such a private individual.
Yeah.
She said to me, so you got a new show. I said, yes, it's called Fruit Fly. She said, well, that's a cute title. What's it about? I said, you. She said, oh, please, what could you possibly talk about me? She thinks she's the most boring person. And I've gotten, all I have to do is go home for 3 days and I get more material.
Gold. Fantastic.
She called recently and told me that she moved in with my twin sisters, which is a wonderful thing. But she brought her cat, Misty, who's old. And then they have Oreo, their cat. And she told me she wanted to tell me something and that I must promise I would never tell my twin sisters even after she was gone.
Yeah.
I thought, where is this headed?
Right, yeah.
She said, Oreo murdered Misty.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, Mother, murder's a strong word. I don't think cats murder one another. She said, and I said, and I read the euthanasia report. Now, Mother, you know Misty was put to sleep because she had kidney failure. Well, wouldn't your kidneys fail if a big cat jumped on you constantly?
That
is just a conversation, you know.
Okay.
But I can get a whole... story out of the death of Misty. And
oh, wow. Well, what a mother to have. Goodness. I feel too, my heart does twang a little for Misty there.
Poor Misty.
Poor old Misty. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us again.
Thank you.
Out playwright and actor Leslie Jordan visited with Rosie Wilby in London last month to promote his latest one-man show, Fruit Fly.
Everybody has to have a mother. There's no choice about it either way. From the day she gives birth to you, she will prove her true worth to you, no matter what you do or what you say. Who else would take the time to feed a baby instead of spending nights in bed with Dad? Even if she tires of you, there's no one she can give you to, and yet she loves you even when you're bad. Mom, oh Mom, this is your song for all of the years that you thought I'd go wrong. You made me eat and you kept me neat. Well, now that you're old and gray, there's something that I want to say. It's Mom, oh Mom, this is your song. I still can't believe that you'd last me this long. I was a rotten kid, but you forgave all I did. And now I want to show you my appreciation. Sure, it's true, I had to have a mother. That's a fact that nobody denies. But I'm glad it's you who bore me. You did all my homework for me. Lots of you bring teardrops to my eyes. I could have been the daughter of a flapper. Or even worse, a gal with a career. But instead I had a mother who could think of nothing other than the children she loved oh so dear. Mom, oh Mom, this is your song for all of the years that you thought I'd go wrong. You made me eat and you kept me neat. Well, now that you're old and gray, there's something I've just gotta say. It's Mom, oh Mom, this is your song. You tried hard to hide it, but I knew all along. I ruined all your dreams, made fun of all your screams. Now I'm gonna show you my appreciation.
What do you want for my life, Mom?
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Carol Myers, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Tanya Ukina and Rosie Wilby contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle and Steve Pride. The new Miss Alice Stone Lady Society Orchestra performed Everybody Has to Have a Mother, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by the Ivana Foundation and by our generous listener supporters. Thank you. Remember, you can read NewsWrap, subscribe to our CDs, listen to our podcasts, and link to our blog by logging on to thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KMUD, Garberville, California, CFRC, Kingston, Ontario, 4ZZZ, Brisbane, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.